Our next guest today says architecture has the power to change your life, and we're going to explore that power today with a special focus on energy-efficient and sustainable buildings. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Great to have back Virge Temme. She is an architect and general contractor who's specialized in sustainable design for more than 20 years. She designed some of the most energy-efficient homes in the state, was recognized by Build International magazine as one of the leaders in green architecture here in the Midwest, recently won the Women in Sustainability Award. That's given out by the U.S. Green Building Council. So have you incorporated sustainable design into your home? What do you do to improve energy efficiency? Or have you built a home that's green? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Virge Temme joins us by phone. Virge, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today.
Hi, Larry. It's nice to be with you again.
Yeah, it's great to have you back. You believe that architecture has the power to change lives. Can you explain?
Well, our homes are the one entity that we probably spend the most time with. We spend more time inside a building, whether it be our home, our office, our school, than we do outside. And so what we do within our buildings, and specifically within our home, can set the whole tone for our entire lives, our attitudes, our health, the way we relate to nature. And designing a home in such a way that it makes you feel calm, that it interacts with your desired activities, that it interacts with nature, really elevates the human spirit.
Oh, I think you're right about that. But what don't people understand about sustainable architecture? What are the biggest questions you hear?
Well, the biggest question I hear is people really don't know how to even start thinking about this. You know, there are so many programs, there are so many magazines that touch on this level of green and that level of green. And, you know, there are some people who think that if they tear down their existing house and put a great big huge new house with a whole bunch of solar panels on the roof, that's a green roof or that's a green house. Not necessarily. In fact, that might be contrary to a sustainable way of approaching a home design. And I think the most important thing to think about is first start out with how large a house you need, or moreover, how small can you live? And throughout the rest of the world, and for that matter, more and more on the East and West Coast, and it's moving toward the central states, people are beginning to realize that big is not always best, that when we consciously reduce the amount of space that we're living in and do it in a meaningful way, we can pack a lot more enjoyability and usefulness into our homes than if we just keep applying more and more square footage.
And buildings obviously impact the environment in many ways, do they not?
Well, buildings actually contribute over 30% of the greenhouse gases that are causing global atmospheric warming. And it's that warming that is creating all these changes in our weather patterns, the droughts, the fires, the hurricanes. You know, I just heard on the news this morning that we're about to break the record for the most tornadoes, the most days of tornadoes that register more than 8 tornadoes a day. And that's all telling us something. It tells us that, you know, the atmosphere is warming, the globe is warming. And if we can do anything to help mitigate that, you know, there are two different things that we can do, one of which I'm not going to touch on because it's a very sensitive subject and it has to do with the amount of children we have. But the other is certainly how we regulate our homes. And architects across the world, designers, engineers across the world, are all moving toward designing nothing but net zero energy homes. And net zero energy means that the building consumes no more energy than it creates. It's basically a passive house. And what we're doing here in Wisconsin, there's an entity called Passive House Institute US. And It is based on the science of designing low-energy homes, homes that consume, you know, 90% or less energy for heating and cooling, and 80% lower energy than code requires overall. And I'm happy to say that Wisconsin now has, as of about a month ago, now has its own chapter of what's called FEAS, Passive House Association U.S. FEAS. It's a lot of acronyms. But among this organization are a number of Certified Passive House Consultants, CPHC, and Certified Passive House Home Raters, who do third-party analysis of the homes once they're designed, as they're being constructed, and then after they're constructed, to make sure that they're the tightest homes, the most energy-efficient homes possible.
Do you work, and of course you work on new homes, and I, you know, sometimes think about some of the definitions, and you sort of touched on that a little bit, but what about what is green, what is passive? What does it mean to be passive, or what about natural? Those are all, or LEED certified for that matter.
Well, they're all different programs. LEED is a comprehensive program that deals not only with the house itself, but also the site, how the site is handled, how vegetation is handled, how water, location of the building is considered. You know, if you purchase a lot in town where everything is walkable, it's a lot greener than if you buy 20 acres out in the country mm-hmm. and you have to get in your car to drive anywhere you want to go. So it starts, you know, from start to finish on the program. That's the LEED program. Again, that's a very comprehensive program. There's another program that is similar to LEED, but on steroids. And it is probably what we're heading to next, and that is the Living Building Challenge. And I won't go into that in this program because it's very involved, and I'm just starting to dip my toes into that water. But then Passive House is, as I mentioned, it started with a modeling program that was developed in Germany. And as you're designing a building, it helps inform the designer of how much insulation is necessary in the walls, based on the location of the building, how much shading it has, what latitude and longitude, where it's located, the types of windows that are used, the number of windows that are used. And so it's a lot of different elements that go into modeling this. How many corners are on the exterior of the building, for instance. And it's based actually three of the programs that it's based on or it refers to is the EPA Energy Star rating, the Department of Energy Zero Energy Ready Homes, HERS rating, WaterSense. It compiles a lot of different programs into a passive house certification. But a lot of people, because of the name passive house, confuse that with passive solar. And passive solar can be part of it. Passive solar simply means that you heat your home with the energy of the sun. And that can be part of passive house. It doesn't necessarily have to be. And I should say right here, too, that passive house doesn't necessarily have to be a house. It can be your office building. It can be a workshop. It can be a studio. It can be a large commercial building. It can be an apartment building. It's just the general name that was given to it long ago, and we can't seem to get away from it.
Well, I was thinking about my own home, which was a 1906 home.
Oh, yeah.
That we, rather than knock the house down, we spent quite a bit of time on ways to make it energy efficient, passive. It's an Energy Star home now.
Oh, good.
But we did a lot of work on the home to make it that way. And so it's not necessarily have to be a brand new home in order to.
No, not at all. In fact, there are a number of certified passive houses that are passive house projects that are energy retrofits. And the one thing I'll say about that is that when people enter into a project of an energy retrofit, they do need to be very careful about moisture within the house. It's not a matter of just slapping on a whole bunch of insulation. It's a matter of determining, you know, how that insulation reacts to the existing exterior walls, for instance, and having the right combinations of insulation. Because what can happen is if you have insulation of two different R values, two different heat resistance values, then you can sometimes unknowingly create a dew point inside of your wall, which can create moisture and mold. So it's very, very important when you're doing an energy retrofit or when you're trying to create a net zero energy home to work with a specialist who really understands how to properly put together different wall, roof, flooring assemblies.
What drew you to this type of architecture, by the way?
That's a really good question. I think I've always tried to be very conscious of how we interact with nature. I think, you know, when I was, I don't know, probably 6 years old, went out and dug up a garden in my mother's backyard, and that didn't go over very well. when I got into grad school, I was selected to be part of a group of grad students, architecture students, landscaping students, and we worked in collaboration with other licensed architects, engineers, builders. We went down to Fort Hood, Texas, and designed a completely sustainable neighborhood. And
from there?
from there, it just kept getting more and more. And, you know, periodically, I just look around the world to see, you know, what other people are doing and how we can improve upon what we are doing. And I think the United States has made some headway. We're very far behind the rest of the world, or the rest of the Western world. And I think we really need to pick up the pace a little bit.
There we go. Well, I tell you what, we'll have another half hour to talk with Virge Temme, architect and general contractor. She specializes in sustainable design. We'll take a look at the news and find out what else is in store for us, and then we'll be back with Virge. You stay with us. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking about efficient building design today and the future of sustainable homes with our guest, Virge Temme, architect, general contractor, specialized in sustainable design for more than 20 years. She designed some of the most energy efficient homes in the state and was recognized by Build International magazine as one of the leaders in green architecture in North America, recently won the Women in Sustainability Award given out by the U.S. Green Building Council. And I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments. What do you think about energy efficient or sustainable homes? Join in. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Maybe you have some goals for your home. What are they? Or if you're thinking about a home like this, what questions do you have? You can, again, join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Virge, if someone wants to make their home more sustainable, where do they go? What do they do first?
Well, if they have an existing home, the very first thing that they would want to do is have an energy assessment. And you can contact Wisconsin Focus on Energy. They have a number of raters who can come, and they'll do a blower door test on your house, and that measures how leaky your house is, and then help you identify where you might have leaks, because leaks, have, you know, unplanned openings in your home are the path by which heat escapes. And that makes your energy bills go up. It causes drafts in your house. And so the very first thing you want to do is an energy assessment. And beyond that, then some things that people could be thinking about is going through their homes and sealing up, you know, electrical boxes, for instance, and checking to see how their house measures up. There are online programs with most energy suppliers, like WPS has one, where you can see, based on your energy usage, how you compare with other homes of similar sizes. So that would be the first thing. But if you're building a new home or if you're planning a serious energy retrofit, then the best thing you can do is contact someone who really is an expert on how to do this. As I said before, it's not a matter of just adding a bunch of insulation.
Right.
You know, that's a good start, but you have to know how to properly add it, where to add it, you know, how to detail your windows and doors around the insulation, because that's where a lot of energy leaks out, too. And how to seal your home. Some things that a lot, there's this ongoing debate, actually, among, you know, some older builders, people who've been in the building marketplace for a number of decades, who to this day still maintain that a house has to breathe. You know, so they expect that the house is going to have some leaks. And that is fine.
Doesn't need to be the case?
No. No, it's like, okay, with a human body, we breathe through our nose or our mouths, right? That's a planned place of breathing, you know. And you need to look at the house in the same way. You have to plan the orifices through which your house is going to breathe. And if you have a very tight house, the best thing you can do is control the breathing on that house. And you do that with an air-to-air heat exchanger. Or, I'm sorry, well...
That's what they used to call it.
Yeah, an ERV, which is an energy recovery ventilator, or I forget what the other one is because it's not used up here in Wisconsin, but it's an air exchanger, which brings in fresh air and expels stale air from the house, and it does this continuously. That is the best way to bring fresh air into your building and make it breathe properly so it, you know, doesn't hyperventilate.
I'm wondering, you know, when you work with a client, I assume, and I'm sure you do, need to talk about their goals for their home, and that has to play a role.
Well, absolutely. You know, one thing that I really try to help people understand is the building community has, from, you know, the 1930s onward, always focused on the bottom line of construction cost. And what we really need to be looking at is the life cycle costing of the building. The homes that I design and that other similar architects and designers develop look at the life cycle costing, and what that does is it measures what the house would cost if you use just conventional construction techniques, 2x6 construction, 2x6 walls, bad insulation, R32 roof, that sort of thing. And then you compare that with homes that are super insulated that might have 12 inches of insulation, might have double the amount of insulation in the walls, in the ceiling, a little bit more expensive windows. And then you look at the heating cost, the heating and cooling costs of each of those two buildings. And across the board, what we're finding is the life cycle costing, the combination of the energy bills and the mortgage. If if you have a 15 or 30 year mortgage, you're actually saving money by building a more energy efficient home. And there have been a lot of studies across the United States, and actually with the FAIS group here in Wisconsin, we're starting a feasibility study to compare homes that are built by code, by baseline code, versus how we design. And across the board, through all these different studies, all these different independent groups that have been looking at this issue, we're finding that to build a super energy efficient home costs anywhere from 3 to 7% more, which is not a whole lot of money. And with that, then you're usually netting out a gain when you offset the energy savings.
So it's a good deal.
Yeah, it is. And so, you know, so that's something that I talk to my clients about. And I have to admit, you know, I'm kind of unusual in the fact that because I've been doing this for so long, that is specifically what people come to me for. And what I encourage other architects and designers to do is start looking into this same thing and start educating themselves about how to build energy efficient homes and look into this cost discrepancy, because frankly it's a benefit to their clients, to their customers, to do this. And you know, just like doctors, we are responsible to the people we serve, and it's more responsible to look after their cost savings over the long term rather than just whittling down, you know, the bottom line and building a home as inexpensively as possible so you can have granite countertops.
let's take some calls. By the way, you can join in with your questions or comments or maybe your experience to share when it comes to making your home more energy efficient and sustainable. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Mike in Wisconsin Rapids, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you. So I'd like to ask your guest what she would consider to be her most unique or radical approach to home construction that perhaps people aren't using now or wouldn't be familiar with, such as, is she putting in 12-inch thick exterior walls or triple or quadruple pane windows or geothermal? What is her most unique application so far?
All right.
Well, I've worked with all of those. Up here in Door County, you know, we have pretty much the same climate data throughout the county, and this is primarily where I operate. And you know, most of the homes that I design up here, I use double wall construction. It's you know, two by four walls. They have a space in between them, and those cavities are filled completely with insulation. So as far as windows, you really have to look at what your exposure is. And in some cases, you want triple pane because, you know, you might be on a bluff and you have heavier winds, you have colder winds coming in. So you don't have to have triple pane windows everywhere, but the places where you have the most exposure, you probably want to look at that. You can look at different window companies. I've used European companies. I've used American companies. But you want to look at the windows that are going to give you the U values, the insulating values that you need for your overall design. And once again, this comes down to energy modeling, you know, looking at the entire building and figuring what you need to balance the building envelope, the walls, the roof, the windows, the doors. But then you also have to look at the budget. You know, definitely we have to hit the budgetary constraints of the client. Because if we can't do this within budget, then we're not going to do it, right?
Right.
So, you know, sometimes we have to go with, I don't want to say a lower cost window by any means, but, you know, sometimes we simply have to go with double pane windows, which are really more the standard, rather than triple pane, simply because we do have to hit a budgetary number. And in that case, maybe what we do is we thicken the walls a little bit more with more insulation, because that's less expensive than the more expensive windows.
And it, you know, and just the design around the windows, the framing and so forth, there are probably more problems associated with that sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we try to do in super insulated homes is to eliminate as much thermal bridging as possible. And the thermal bridging, imagine, if you will, studs in a wall. And if you just have plywood on the outside of your building and gypsum board, drywall on the inside of the building, that cold and the heat is going to transfer right through those wood studs. So what we try to do is make sure that we have a gap through some kind of insulating material or methodology to eliminate that gap. And so that bridge, and the worst thermal bridges are really at the windows and doors. And so it's very critical that you make sure that you've got properly designed insulation around those areas so you don't have cold transmitting through the framework around the windows.
That makes a lot of sense. Mike, thanks for that question. Appreciate it very much. Jim in Fish Creek has something for us. Let's go there.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
We've recently built a 750-square-foot secondary building on our property to be used as a guest house studio. And currently the framing walls are up. They're 6-inch, and it's sprayed internally with 2 inches of insulation. The outside is wrapped in Tyvek, and I'm looking for recommendations or some discussion about what to use on the exterior, be it, you know, stucco, or do I have an air gap before siding gets put on it, or who can I talk to perhaps look at it and give me some recommendations?
Well, first of all, I'll say, Tyvek is a decent air barrier, but what you want to have is really a moisture barrier, vapor barrier on the outside of that building. So unless your Tyvek is taped properly, it's probably not going to be your best line of defense. But if you have 2 inches, I assume it's spray foam on the interior. Is that correct, Jim?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so what we're finding is the spray foam over years will shrink, so that's not going to give you quite the tightness that it does initially. You know, that over the years it'll dry out, it'll pull away from the wood. And so what you might want to consider, if you don't have anything on the exterior of this building right now, what you might want to consider is putting rigid foam on the exterior of this building. And that will give you the proper air barrier and vapor barrier around the outside of your building. But then on the outside of that, and please do this whether you put the foam on or not, you'll want to have a drainage plane. And that way, if there's any water, you know, any vapor that does end up coming between your siding and your wall, your substrate, then at least it has a route that it can escape from the building before it comes into your walls. And that can be something as simple as rip down half-inch 2x4, or, you know, half-inch pieces of 2x4 and nail those to the outside of the wall. And then you put your siding on top of that.
Oh, okay. So there's room for the moisture to go if it needs to.
Exactly. And if you don't want to go to that extreme, then there are some other products. There's a house wrap called HydroGap that you can use. It actually has little rubberized bumps on the outside of it.
Oh.
So that creates kind of a drainage plane as well. That would be the easiest thing for you to do.
All right. That makes sense. Good luck, Jim. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Frank in Duluth, Minnesota, will give you a chance. Hi, Frank.
Yes, hello. Thanks for having me on. I just want to give a shout-out for a super insulated home. My wife and I had one built by a woman architect here in Duluth, Minnesota, and the comfort factor is something she comments on all the time. There are no cold spots. There are no drafts. It's something that it's hard to understand until you can experience it. And the comment about building some of the older builders saying you don't need some of this stuff or it needs to breathe. When I was researching building a home, I talked to the Builders Association here in Duluth area, and the president told me there are a lot of builders that will build you a brand new 30-year-old house. And
that's very true.
the energy efficiency is a system. And I think a lot of builders just don't understand it. And I really recommend getting the advice of a professional to have it done properly, and to just be really, really satisfied with it.
You know, those are good comments. Virg, you want to comment? I think Frank made some good points there.
No, I really appreciate Frank calling in, and you know, having testimony from people who've lived in these houses is so valuable. And there are if you go on fius.org, P-H-I-U-S.org, there are occasionally tours of passive houses that you can go in. You can experience what it's like to be in one of these homes. You know, what Frank brings up about having no drafts is one of the things that we really strive for, is to make sure that there's not a significant temperature differential between the walls and the floor and the ceiling, because that's what creates drafts. And, you know, one of the things that I'd like to mention is, you know, I've had a couple of open houses on some of the homes I've designed, and inevitably someone at some point during the day opens up a door, you hear the traffic, you hear the wind outside, and then they close the door. And then they open the door, and you hear the traffic, and they close the door, and it's so quiet. And everyone is just marveling at how amazingly quiet these homes are. So I think for anybody who lives in a city, you know, Chicago, Minneapolis, whatever, you definitely want to consider this.
You know, and here's another. I have a friend who has an older home that is not as well insulated and sustainable as my own home, and she was over to visit, and she went to look at my thermostat, and she said, my thermostat is set the same as yours, but your place seems much more comfortable.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing, isn't it? I mean, if you really pay attention to what you're doing, your house can be a lot more comfortable at a lot lower temperature because you don't have those drafts. You know, most well-insulated homes can be set at 68 degrees, and they feel as comfortable as other homes at 72 or 74 degrees.
Yeah, that's the experience. You're developing a game called the Zero Sum House.
Oh, yeah.
What's that? Well,
it leads back to the one of the original questions you asked me, you know, what is green? And inevitably, like over the years, everybody asks, well, how do I even begin this? And so I'm in the process of creating this, it's a board game, and we're looking at maybe developing an app out of it. But it's all the questions you think about, all the questions you should be thinking about as you're designing a home. You know, how big you make the house, how small you make it, you know, what types of windows you use, whether you use a specialist who can design this for you, whether you're just pulling a plan off the internet and giving it to a builder, how you detail your insulation, what kind of insulation you use, and that's another factor I'll bring up too. You know, getting back to the healthiness of a house, is there are so many materials we use in the house that actually have volatile organic compounds. They outgas. They're unhealthy. You know, that new paint smell that everybody used to talk about, you don't smell that so much anymore, and it's because these VOCs, these volatile organic compounds, have been extracted from most paints.
Yeah.
And because they're poison. They're poison in the air. And some, you know, what I strive for in these double wall constructions that I do is to take into account the global warming potential of the insulation that I use. So foam insulations, for instance, have an enormous global warming potential. The outgassing, the gases that come from that, from the propellants to spray those in, can stay in the atmosphere for as much as 800 years.
You know, oh, man, we are out of time. We'll have to have you back. Virg, how do people get a hold of you? What's your website?
Oh, it's vergtemme.com.
Vergtemme.com. Always great to have her come by and visit with us. V-I-R-G-E-T-E-M-M-E, vergtemme.com. We'll have her back, and we'll talk with her again. I want to thank you so much for listening. Tomorrow we'll take a look at some books about one about a pivotal decision in history and about leadership in the other book. Thanks for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store.